This is a summary of the Palace Papers by bestbookbriefings.com. The Palace Papers. Inside the House of Windsor. The Truth and the Turmoil. By Tina Brown. The royal family facing the world after Diana's death. After Diana's death, sadness seemed to overwhelm not only the life of the royal family but also of their friends and attendants. This was quite visible in the memorial service held at the Guards Chapel in 2006. The writer points out that the family resembled a dejected group. Even worse, youngsters looked terribly resentful. But ever since Diana's death, the Queen had always made it clear that the family was not into having another Diana, and that the throne heirs were the only ones who mattered. Likewise, everybody should serve and support the crown, not themselves. Until Diana's advent, only the Queen's mother and Princess Margaret Rose were the ones to win public attention, the former for her radiance and the latter for her youth and glamour. Lesser in popularity were the Crown Prince, Charles, Princess Anne, Prince Andrew, and finally Edward. But Diana was extraordinarily attractive, as she came to improve the royals' image after the shame incurred on it by the abdication of Edward for the sake of Wallace Simpson's love. This was considered an act of egotism. For a long time had the royal family been private. Neither Prince Philip nor the Queen allowed the media to penetrate their life. The author says that Prince Philip deeply regretted allowing the BBC cameras to penetrate their most private refuges to shoot the documentary, titled Royal Family. In fact, his unstable childhood and early life made him strongly protect his family and image. His uncle King Constantine was forced to abdicate, and his father was arrested and court-martialed after the outbreak of the 1922 revolution, then banished to France. As for his mother, Princess Alice, she fell victim to paranoid schizophrenia, only to be hospitalized, after which she invented her own religious order and started roaming around the world dressed as a nun. As for Philip's father, he spent the rest of his life with his mistress in Paris. Philip was never to see either parent again. This ingrained within him a conviction that a kingdom's survival is largely based on its clinging to duty. Hence, he did not sympathize with Princess Margaret's unsuccessful love affair. Noteworthy here is that Margaret never acted disrespectfully toward the Queen. Even more, she abandoned her first love out of her understanding that everything else is subservient to royal duty. Nobody used the media as skillfully as Diana did. Even more, she used it as a deadly weapon against the royal family. For instance, she made a camera crew come to Kensington Palace when the employees were off. She hid the equipment to it look like newly delivered items and had an interview recorded with Martin Bashir, which she used to serve her purpose. After Diana's death, Charles's main concern was not just to clear up his image before the public who thought he was behind Diana's tragic death. He also wanted to win the people's acceptance of Camilla, the woman he had always loved. In effect, he strove to convince the people he was not in a hurry to marry Camilla. Additionally, he tried to win admiration by advocating many important causes. But Charles's most difficult task was having to wake his sons up to inform them of their mother's death, second to which was arranging the funeral and deciding who was to walk behind the coffin. But with the passage of time, he had another mission to undertake. It was to exert an effort to be a good father. For instance, he would read them stories until they fell asleep and accompany them to the theater. Another thing that troubled the Queen was the Spencer speech during the service when her brother vowed to protect her sons from sadness and help them live in the way she had planned. Yet, in the years that followed, every possible effort was exerted to conceal the young princes not only from their mother's former circle but also from the press. Charles and Camilla. Camilla has always been a source of comfort for Charles on the physical and emotional levels. Here, it is worthy to point out that Camilla was the great-granddaughter of Alice Keppel, who was King Edward VI's favorite. Camilla took after her great-grandmother, being clever and attractive. Also, her marriage to a complacent husband made her plunge into such a relationship. Moreover, like her great-grandmother, she has never defied the existing state of affairs. Additionally, as an aristocrat, she knows all about the royals' etiquette. As for Charles, like his ancestor, he has to wait for decades to ascend the throne, which is somehow frustrating. Charles seems to be the longest-serving crown prince. Also, like his ancestor, his childhood and school days were far from happy. Charles was misunderstood by his dictatorial father and dispossessed of a wholesome emotional tie with his mother. Adding to Charles's bad luck was his career in the Navy. He was not a remarkable officer, for he was mediocre at math, but he retained his post due to being the crown prince. Likewise, Camilla's career was a failure. She never wanted to work. Even worse, she was fired from her job as a decorator at Colfax and Fowler for showing up late, after she had spent a night dancing. Charles and Camilla shared the love of polo and fox hunting. In fact, their first photographs were taken at a polo match. At first, however, she was charmed by Andrew Parker Bowles, her ex-husband, and it seemed like her involvement with Charles was part of a plan to make the former jealous. Though they got married, she never succeeded in making Bowles overcome his weakness for other women. He was an unfaithful husband. Charles's relationship with Camilla made his royal parents obsessed with finding him a wife. Likewise, he longed to settle down. He was on the verge of proposing to Anna Wallace when Camilla's appearance at a summer ball, and luring him into dancing with her irritated Wallace. Their apparent liberty with each other made her change her mind. Diana was, then, a perfect choice for the palace, for her youth, beauty, virginity, and noble blood. Skillfully, however, Camilla was able to intertwine Charles into her life after marriage. That was because, as her great-grandmother did with Charles's ancestor, she listened to him empathically and managed to make him the center of the world. Thus, they became lovers. They became so much involved that a phone call between them, which involved a lot of unseemly expressions, was recorded and leaked only to be dubbed Camillagate. The author points out that Diana had always feared lest Camilla ruins her marriage. Noteworthy is that like Charles and Philip, Diana had an unsettled childhood. Her father was unkind to her mother. He would not allow her any independent life. They used to fight a lot. One of the worst moments in the life of Diana's mother was when her husband refused to let her see her baby who died. Eventually, the mother eloped with Peter Shandkid and the father remarried. Surviving the Camillagate. It was alleged that the relationship between Charles and Camilla never stopped even after he married Diana. It was likely that their relationship boomed after Prince Harry was born. Begetting an heir and a spare made him lose his interest in Diana. However, Princess Margaret Hesse points out that Diana's unmanageable needs made Charles on edge. According to the author, some of the palace's staff asserted that Diana was not actually a victim. An example which proves this was that at a time of widespread joblessness in the country, Diana was the only royal to buy a foreign car. As a wife, she used to leave her husband alone at the dinner table and take her sons upstairs. She was also said to be capricious and hot-tempered. However, the Camillagate made Camilla a devilish figure. Unluckily for her, she had no guards or gatekeepers like Charles to protect her. She could not go anywhere without being humiliated, scorned, or worse, spat on. Unlike the royal mistresses of the past, Camilla was not tolerated. She lost her health and liveliness. Though Charles was upset about it, he could not help her. She was supported by her father and a few friends. Adding to her distress was the decline of her mother's health and eventual death. Moreover, Charles's declaration of infidelity, when interviewed about the phone call leakage, with her was the direct reason behind the collapse of her marriage, followed by financial difficulties and loss of many investments. But Charles felt it was his duty to provide for her. He started giving her benefits, like buying her a new car, granting her a dress allowance, and assigning her protection. However, public sympathy toward her was started by an accident which she had. Later, on her 50th birthday, he gave her a necklace which belonged to Alice Keppel and which he retrieved from a private collection. He also attended the party. 8 months after Diana's death, Charles ordered that Camilla be granted an annual pay of £120,000 from his own funds, along with other benefits. The third millennium comes with more troubles. One of the troubles that the third millennium came with was the Millennium Dome. The author says that it represented all that the Queen hated, namely, pomp, overspending, and false patriotic emotions. Hence, the Queen was unsettled regarding what to do during her Jubilee celebrations to be held, then, in 2002, let alone the way Diana's death had affected the public mood. She had also been suffering from the bruises of what she called annus horribilis in 1992, when the marriages of three of her children were ruined and Windsor Castle caught fire. Adding on, a Republican movement in Australia called for the abolition of the monarchy. A referendum in this sense was chaired by a lawyer and merchant, Malcolm Turnbull, since Australians thought they would not tolerate Charles as their future king. However, Australians voted for no republic with 55-45%. Another concern was the Queen's relationship with the Crown Prince. Rarely did they speak, except through intermediaries. When the Queen was invited to her son's 50th birthday, she declined it, after getting to know Camilla would be present. Moreover, Charles's sons did not tolerate her, especially Harry, who would sink into silence or a state of resentfulness whenever she was invited to lunch or tea. Noteworthy here is that Charles was already suffering from a lack of maternal concern. In one interview, he said that if she had been less concerned with the state affairs, she would have made a good mother. On the other hand, Charles adored his grandmother, which got on the Queen's nerves. Another problem emanated from Prince Edward's side. In fact, Edward had always been the least cause of trouble. His marriage to Sophie Rees-Jones in 1999 was met with relief. Though she was the daughter of a tire merchant, the Queen's liking for her increased because she never showed off. Sophie's PR experience, pleasant manners, and desire to abide by the protocol made her one of the royals' useful assets. At the age of 35, Edward had media ambitions. He tried to embark on the television business, which brought him embarrassment for some time. He founded a company which made documentaries, one of which bore the title Edward as Edward, about his great uncle. But it was a failure. Adding on, his wife was beguiled by a trickster who pretended to be an agent of a Dubai sheikh who wanted to be her client. But he actually was an investigative reporter for News of the World, owned by Murdoch, who wanted to extract information about Edward, who was once accused of being gay, Charles, and so on. The scandal was a throwback to annus horribilis. But it was then high time that the Queen stopped ostrich and showed support for Edward and Sophie and their independent careers. Sophie also apologized a lot for this embarrassment and decided to step aside as chairman of her PR company and reevaluate her role. Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, a perfect match. The Queen's marriage to Prince Philip was out of love. In fact, she fell in love with him when he was a Navy officer. After marriage, the Queen utilized her husband's efforts to serve the crown without making him feel unqualified. For instance, when they were invited to dinner, the Queen would wait for Philip to choose the person he would talk to, be it on his left or right, then she would turn in the same direction herself. She also allowed him to make crucial decisions for their children, such as sending Prince Charles to Eton. Moreover, she gave him full autonomy in order to please him. This is clearly seen in giving him a private pilot's license, for he found it energizing to fly alone, without reporters or peers pursuing him. Philip, on his part, respects the Queen. Even his infidelities were proven to be rumors, thanks to being well shielded by the MI6. Queen Elizabeth and Princess Margaret. When Queen Elizabeth ascended the throne, her mother and sister stuck with each other. The busier the Queen became, the more disregarded Margaret felt. She had less and less to do. Hence, she would indulge in partying and sleep late. Moreover, she got used to excessive drinking and had attacks of depression, which the Queen thought attempted to attract attention. Even worse, when she suffered from strokes later in her life and had to use a wheelchair, both the Queen and Prince Philip considered it an act of the drama. However, Princess Margaret was said to be a kind boss. All her staff was deeply saddened by her death. In fact, not only did she treat them nicely, but also she used to ensure they had good rooms on her official trips and enjoyed good picnics whenever they were off duty. She also used to bring them presents on occasions and address them courteously using their surnames. The author points out that she was upset when Princess Diana called her chauffeur by his first name instead of his surname. Margaret was also an affectionate mother who took pride in producing two adjusted children, David and Sarah. Upon Margaret's death, the Queen Mother decided to abdicate, asserting that attending her daughter's funeral was the last duty for her to fulfill. But she was able to reinvent herself, imparting upon herself the image of the radiant, cheerful grandmother of the nation who gave out prizes, christened ships, inspected squadrons, uncovered monuments, and the like, which made the people adore her. Yet, the Queen Mother's life after retirement was not devoid of luxury. In fact, the Queen had to increase her income from her own fund, granting her more than £4 million annually. The Queen thought her passing at 101 would mark a more relaxed time, for it was then that Charles was allowed to invite Camilla to the funeral as a friend of the Queen Mother. Moreover, Camilla was invited to the Queen's Jubilee in 2002 and allowed to sit in the third row. Servants' issues. The miserliness and careless supervision of the royal family members of their servants gave rise to a culture of bonuses for their attendants. Heaps of luxurious watches, picture frames, ties, and so on which were given to the royals on trips or events were passed on to staff members. Prince Charles in specific ran a negligent household and office. He has always been late in replying to messages, delegating most of the work to his private secretaries. This, however, aroused internal anger. The arrest of Paul Burrell, Diana's former butler, is a clear example of his lax style. When policemen searched his house, they discovered lots of paintings, photos, and chinaware which belonged to the late princess. They also discovered 2,000 negatives, including one for Charles in the bath with the children. They also found letters written by Prince Philip to Diana, giving her matrimonial advice. But Charles requested that the charges against Butler be dropped, lest any of the secrets he knew be leaked. Noteworthy here is that Charles had always felt he was undervalued by the Queen, people, and the press. But in fact, he had many accomplishments. He had succeeded in transforming 900 acres in Highgrove into sustainable farming. He also made an eco-friendly farm that is free from GMO crops. He also contributed to raising awareness of the fact that plastic was dangerous to the environment. Additionally, he contributed a lot to youth advancement, helping the homeless and drug addicts. He also contributed to the ban of fox hunting, though it was a favorite sport among royals, including Camilla and his two sons. How Camilla's life was to change for the better. Camilla was finally to become Charles's wife, thanks to her friendship with the Archbishop of Canterbury. The Queen's refusal to consent to civil marriage. Camilla has always been supportive of Charles. She has always shown prudence and loyalty. William and Harry. William has always been well balanced. He would pause well before the cameras. But off the camera, he was out of control, as his nanny put it. On the other hand, Harry was quieter than his brother and used to watch things silently. However, William was to give in to being trained on the duties and responsibilities as heir to the throne, which made him more subdued, whereas Harry became the lively example of mischief. Harry lived by the motto that he can be as mischievous as he wanted providing he does not get caught. He would count on his brother for a defense whenever they were caught in mischief. William was highly protective of his brother. Both boys were sent to Eton, though Diana thought Harry would not be able to make it academically. At school, William preferred to have prudent friends. He was a star, he was captain of the swimming team and played rugby and football. On the other hand, it was hard for Harry. He was at the bottom of the class. He was not happy and yearned for his mother. However, he performed well in polo and cricket and was elected captain of games. Likewise, he rode horses, skied, and shot better than his elder brother. He was also the Queen's favorite grandchild. Noteworthy, however, is that both boys were victims of the war between their parents. Harry adored his mother and idealized her more than his brother, who understood her more and knew that a tabloids ruined his mother's life. William learned early to conceal his feelings. But he was about to suffer from a nervous breakdown after the publication of Princess in Love, which claimed there was a love affair between the princess and her former guard, James Hewitt. He was also very upset when his mother vilified his father in her interview with Martin Bashir. That Diana's tragic death was caused by the paparazzi's chase of her car left the boys pained and angry. But a year after her death, they issued a statement which showed how impressed they were with the public sympathy and that it was time to move on. So far, both William and Harry have expressed a deep hatred for the press. Kate, the unusual girl. As Prince Philip, Kate was to prove herself a personality of great influence who would be indispensable in the royal palace. The author makes it a point that had it not been for Kate's resilience, she would have been swallowed by the palace's machine. Though Kate's charm bedazzled William, his self-contained nature compelled him to make her wait for a long time until he had carefully assessed her character to know if she was strong enough to endure the royal duties. The easygoing, happiness-seeking Kate is also an example of caution and common sense. Kate was also a star at school. She was, likewise, a star at hockey and joint captain of the tennis team. Kate has always shown a reserved disposition and rarely became drunk. Kate and William's paths crossed at the dorm stairs in Marlborough. She was clever enough to win his confidence. Aware of his secluded disposition, they made their relationship private, shielded by friends. They would arrive at meeting places and depart at separate times. Later, William would invite her to his cottage at Balmoral Estate and teach her how to shoot, which impressed his relatives. Kate did not want their relationship to become public unless he proposed to her, lest she is humiliated in case he abandoned her. But their engagement was to be announced after a trip to Kenya in which William slipped his mother's sapphire and diamond engagement ring on her finger. One of her friends commented on Kate's patience until this happened to say that Kate did not marry William because he is a prince, but despite it, she had wanted a loving husband, children, and a stable life. Throughout, the palace did not officially send a crew to help Kate stave off photographers. She was skillful enough not to court the press or repel them. Moreover, she succeeded in giving a good impression to the public through her simple dressing style. She would not wear anything that is too luxurious for the people to afford. She was recognized as a working professional. But in honor of the wedding, the Queen granted William the title of HRH Duke of Cambridge, Earl of Strathen, and Baron Carrickfergus. Thus, Kate became a royal duchess. She has always conveyed the impression of new royal poise. Noteworthy here is that William's wedding clearly showed his attachment to his brother. Over and above, this marriage restored the monarchy's glorious image as well as the harmony between the palace and the people. The royals succeeded in rebranding themselves. For instance, Camilla started winning over people's affection by appearing with a smile, as if she loved her job. Also, her photos with Kate conveyed unity between the royal generations. In April 2012, the Queen granted Camilla Dame Grand Cross, the highest female rank in the Royal Victorian Order. Also, that Camilla found the tiresome royal tours amusing was a blessing for Charles. What about Harry? Harry had always wanted to serve in the military. But being a prince, his life had to be protected, even if this meant he would be disappointed. In fact, his deployment to Afghanistan was cancelled and he was sent back home the moment his commanding officer got to know of it. Likewise, his deployment in Iraq was cancelled. He felt that all what he was trained for had gone with the wind. The author thinks that Harry would have been happier living in the 19th century as an aristocrat waving his pistol and partying. However, she notes that going to the army saved him from deviant from the correct path for, in fact, Harry used to drink and smoke weed with his mates in the basement of Highgrove. Military life was his passport to order and maturity. He would call his commander, sir, and mean it. He became an excellent pilot and co-pilot. Why Andrew was snubbed? Several scandals have been associated with Prince Andrew's name. Though he was an asset in his teens, being a cheerful, charming young man, he had an immature personality. His scandals, which started with the infidelity of his wife, through being associated with Muammar Gaddafi's son as well as acting as a middleman in helping a Greek sewage company and a Swiss finance house attain a £385 million a contract in Kazakhstan, in return for a £4 million with the deals falling apart, brought about a lot of misfortune to him. Worst of all was his association with Jeffrey Epstein, the sex offender who was imprisoned for procuring a child for prostitution. Epstein lured Andrew into the Manhattan world with all its promises of wealth and women. This caused his losing his title and privileges. Meghan Markle. Meghan knew she would be a star. She was raised by a father who worked as lighting and photography director on the Fox comedy I Married, with Children. But her ambition was not bound to being an actress. When she was 11, she became an active feminist when she wrote a letter to P&G, opposing the sexist overtones of a TV ad. Her mentor, Wendy Riche, describes her as a clever girl who is committed in several areas in her life. She also points out that at the age of 12, Meghan was a keen observant of life, and that she was assertive and enthusiastic. Because she suffered from alienation in her childhood, being the daughter of an African-American woman, she was to become a serious advocate for people suffering from racism. Likewise, she became a successful actress and columnist. She is especially famous for her role as Rachel Zane in As Suits. Meghan was also smart about money. She managed not to go bankrupt like her parents or half-sister. Her blog, The Working Actress, was to earn her $50,000 per episode. She also had another writing lifestyle endeavor, The Tig, in which she promoted all sorts of recipes and household suggestions made by women who survived mistreatment at home. This was another step in her women's empowerment struggle. The next step in this struggle was penetrating the UN. Meghan worked hard and learned more about the mission by sticking with Elizabeth Nyamayaro, senior advisor to South African powerhouse Fumzile Emayambo Nguka, former Undersecretary General and Executive Director of UN Women. Meghan traveled with UN Women to a refugee camp in Rwanda and spent time with female members of parliament. Thus, Meghan became a celebrity with enlightened causes. She had, in fact, given a speech about women's rights in the United Nations. All these factors made Meghan the kind of woman whom Harry never met. He had dated a variety of girls, including aristocrats, heiresses, and idealists. But she was unusual to him. Their paths crossed when he was on a trip to Botswana. Meghan was also charming to both the Queen and Prince Charles. Moreover, Harry used to take trips to Toronto where he stayed at her house undisturbed because of her protective neighbors. Soon he was to confirm his love for Meghan, which, however, was thought of as unwise by his discreet brother. This won Meghan more celebrity and made her an icon of diversity and style. She was even regarded as Kate's moral and aesthetic counterweight, only to make May 19, 2018, a magical day for the House of Windsor in the full sense of the word. The writer points out that everybody was touched by the look of yearning vulnerability with which Harry looked at his bride. More impressive was that the Queen assigned her dresser, Angela Kelly, with presenting to Meghan the five tiaras the Queen had pre-selected, to choose the one she finds most pleasing to wear at her wedding. As for the relationship between Kate and Meghan, the author points out that so far, nobody knows who made the other cry on the day of the wedding. However, it was all about the maids of honor's dressing style. Later, the Queen granted them the titles of Duke and Duchess of Sussex. Though Meghan was excited about her new role and engagements, she found all the arrangements and itinerary set pointless, which made her snubbed by the palace. Meghan was even more upset by having to ask the palace's permission to add any new item to her house. Moreover, that during her tour in Africa she declared to the women in Cape Town she was their sister embarrassed the British, who did not like that equal culture for, unlike Kate, she never learned to reserve her thoughts and feelings. She has been well trained to impart a smile for everything. The thing that worried the couple, especially Harry, was their privacy. For instance, they treated their baby's birth issue as a military secret, denying the press any announcement about it. William supported his brother when he wanted to split operations from the Cambridges. He convinced their father to give Harry additional money. The Sussexes founded a separate office team. But while the Cambridges treat their staff as a collegial professional family, Meghan would behave harshly toward any subordinate. Moreover, while Kate was forgiven for any public mishap, Meghan was not. For instance, when Kate was pregnant, she was described as a serene Madonna. On the other hand, Meghan was criticized for not keeping her hands off her bump. Kate, Camilla, Fergie, and Sophie were all upper-class British women, while Meghan was not. The four ladies were well-versed in etiquette, while Meghan hardly had a mentor in this respect. She was more accustomed to the liberal, interpretive filter on race that prevails in the more cosmopolitan cities of America. Hence, the couple decided to settle down in Canada where Meghan had roots of her own and Harry dreamed of disappearing. This, however, cost them their titles. Likewise, they had to repay the £2.4 million cost of renovating Frogmore, where they used to live, even more. Though they could keep the house as their UK premise, they would have to pay commercial rate rent. Prince Charles stopped funding them after the summer of 2020. Harry was allowed to keep his Invictus Games and Sendabale charities. However, he had to give up all his military titles. As for the Cambridges, this exit added to their workload. Moreover, they had to fill in the charisma void left by Harry and Meghan. Charles also lost two members of his family who could have congenially affected the younger and diverse British public. Following this Megxit came the pandemic with the toll it has had on the world. The world activity came to a stop. It called upon the Queen to play her role as the nation's comforter. However, the only means for outreach was through Zoom. The Duchess of Cambridge was a pleasant Zoom figure, tackling the challenges of home tutoring. In fact, the pandemic brought Britain to its best, for it was like an invitation to unity. The Queen and Prince Philip spent the longest quality time together. But, unfortunately, Harry was secluded from all this, only to return upon his grandfather's death. However, the funeral witnessed a brotherly reunion between William and Harry. Then came the end of 2021, with the ghost of Diana exorcised when the Queen appointed Camilla to Britain's oldest and most senior order of chivalry as the Royal Lady of the Noblest Order of the Garter, in her Platinum Jubilee in February 2022. What is really charming about monarchy is that history repeats itself, though the protagonists are different. True, there will always be rebels, troublesome kids, and scandals, since the royal family is as fallible as any other. But they all have settled to live by the motto of serving and supporting the crown. Queen Elizabeth has always been a faithful servant of the monarchy and the crown. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit bestbookbriefings.com now for more summaries.